Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership. Happy Black History Month. This is Aminata Soul, and it's actually February 14th, which is Frederick Douglass's birthday, in addition to being Valentine's Day. And as I think about it, I realize, you know what? I feel a little more connected with it being Frederick Douglass's birthday. And I think that's because Valentine's Day is so much about flowers and chocolates and expectations and proving you're loved and proving you love. And I don't know, it's just gotten a little out of hand. So I'm really glad to be releasing this or recording this introduction on Valentine's Day, on Frederick Douglass's birthday, because this episode is going to focus on a performance project that my life partner, Michael Germanis, and I co-created. And it took us 3 years to create this. It's called The Chacon Emancipated. And it is a performance where we intertwine Bach and African-American spirituals with the words of Martin Luther King, Assata Shakur, the Black Panther, and Abraham Lincoln. And so here we are during Black History Month, just a couple days after Lincoln's birthday. And I thought it would be a perfect time to share an excerpt from that performance. You're going to hear us interviewed by Reverend Retta Morgan, who is a beautiful vocalist who herself was classically trained at the Peabody Conservatory. And you're going to hear Reverend Retta ask us about the creation process and specifically Michael and his ego. You're going to hear how I went from hating classical music to actually loving Bach. Not all Bach. I still don't like the organ, but a lot more than I would have ever thought. And then I'm also going to talk about, in this interview, we talk about how initially when we first performed this to a traditional classical music audience, which basically means white, older, upper class audience, how it was not well received. But then when we went on a performance in spaces that were like social justice spaces or Black History Month spaces, NAACP kind of spaces, how it was more than well received. You know, we got ovations. I mean, it really connected with people. So I'm sharing this because it's Black History Month. But I'm also sharing this because obviously this is something I co-created with my life partner, someone that I love, and it's Valentine's Day. And it's got me thinking about how, you know, a relationship, a love relationship, has a purpose. It has an energy in it. It has a seed or a potential. And with this relationship, we've been together now 10 years, we have explored the artistic collaboration seed. We performed a lot together for years. We've explored the co-parenting, create a stable container for raising teenagers, which is also a collaboration and very hard. And now here we are in this stage of being empty nesters, and we haven't worked a lot together artistically in the last year or so. And we're kind of like finding our way. You know, what's the natural flow here? So you get to be part of the process of us looking back at what we did when we collaborated creatively. And also, you get a chance to really hear some honest talk about the dance of collaborating across race lines in the context of a country steeped in racism or in, you know, centering whiteness. So I'm so grateful to Reverend Retta for interviewing us and bringing her beautiful centering energy. If you actually want to watch the entire performance and the interview, there's going to be a link in the show notes so you can watch the replay. You can purchase that. And then the other thing I want to say before we move into this episode is that I've been thinking a lot about history and memory and how it's held in our nervous system. And the messages I've gotten from the trees to give it to the earth, give it to Earth Mama. So to me, this is all in preparation for spring, when we get to go into the mode of manifesting, doing, launching, you know, popping out, getting out there for spring. But before we can really do that with a lot of power, we need to spend some time with our presence, cultivating presence, expanding our power to make things happen. We call it Ashe. And the power to make things happen, your presence, your ashe, is something that you build up inside of you by first clearing out. So I'm going to be offering something special. I'm calling it the gift of presence right now. How to manifest your ashe. I'm going to be offering something special around the time of the equinox. So I'm just giving you a heads up to be on the lookout for that. And if you could take a moment to just give us some stars, to write a review wherever you listen to podcasts, I would be so grateful. Without further ado, let's go in and listen to Black History Month special, The Chacon Emancipated. So today we are so grateful to have Reverend Retta serving as our moderator, as our interlocutor, as our spiritual presence, as our elder and grounded being. So we are so excited to have Reverend Retta here. And Reverend Retta, I'm reading a little bit from her bio. She's an interfaith minister. She's a facilitator, artist, fabulous, fabulous vocalist, healer, and her work encompasses the intersections of spirituality, creativity, and activism, all rooted in the intention to work and live into a more just world. And so we are very excited to have Reverend Retta with us today. And before she comes on and talks to you, I'm just going to let you know, basically, Reverend Retta is going to open us up, and then we're going to have part one of the Chacon with earphones, and then we have a little bit of conversation about that, and then you'll get to hear parts two and three. We'll have a little more conversation, and then there'll be a Q&A at the very end.
Peace and blessings, everyone. It is such an honor to join Amanda and Michael today, and each of you, as we explore this incredible piece of music, this piece of art, and the conversation we'll share between. I'd like to start us off by inviting each of us to take a deep breath and to really settle in the place where we are sitting or lying. Just take a deep breath. It is permission to arrive fully here. And as you are breathing and noticing and arriving, I want to sing for you a very brief invocation. It's a wordless prayer to support our settling inwardly. Way. So hopefully we are all settling in and ripe and ready for music and conversation. So we're going to turn to the beginning of our listening and listen to the first part of the Chaconne Emancipated. And we recommend that you use earphones if you have them available.
Ago, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, marking the first time that the United States government took action on behalf of black people. He wrote that on the first day of January, in the year of our Lord 1863, all persons held as slaves in any state where the people were in rebellion against the United States would be then, thenceforward, and forever free. And the executive government of the United States, including the military and naval authority thereof, would recognize and maintain the freedom of such persons and do no act or acts to repress such persons or any of them in any efforts they would make for their actual freedom. Years later, an Alabama preacher addressed over a quarter of a million people in Washington, D.C. on the anniversary of Lincoln's proclamation. He said, 50 years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. But 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. In a sense, we have come to our nation's capital to cash a check. This promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, were guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt, so we have come to our nation's capital to cash this check. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. 1863 is not an end, but a beginning. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his full citizenship rights. Many of our white brothers and sisters, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as a Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horror of police brutality. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and the Negro in New York has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I say to you today, my friends, even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and come to live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. And when we do this, when we allow freedom to reign, we will speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews Gentiles, Protestants, and Catholics will all join hands and sing, in the words of that old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Yes, yes, I see some hands, right? Amazing. Amanda and Michael, thank you so much for that powerful, powerful expression, artistic expression. Yeah, so Michael, we want to start with you. So in your upcoming chapter on art and social change, you've mentioned having to face and let go of your ego while working on this piece in particular. So you want to share a little bit about what your artistic process was like creating this piece?
Wow. Well, letting go of the ego was a huge part. And actually coming to grips with my ego and recognizing what was actually there and what is actually there was really enlightening. And I have to say, even listening to this performance today, I recognize, wow, there was a lot of ego still there. Yes, this is a powerful and wow kind of performance created, but the ego is constantly moving and changing through our lives as we have these experiences. And we have to understand, like with the Chaconne, I think one of the biggest difficulties I had was collaboration, because it's a solo work. I learned it actually with all three of my major teachers and the three different conservatories I attended. I did it on my master's program, on my doctorate program.
At Juilliard.
I studied with a gentleman who was born in 1897. And he, you know, so it is history and it's rooted in Western European music. However, it is so spiritual. And within the first week of dating this beautiful woman, I had to play the Chaconne for her, never intending that we were going to do this. And of course, I wanted it my way.
That's kind of like marriage. I wanted it my way.
Well, I can imagine that there have probably been some shifts in that particular conversation. And so I want to ask you, Michael, a little bit, since you mentioned playing the piece for Amanda early on in your relationship. Also, how would you say your ego showed up in the process of working with Amanda once you all got to the point that you knew that there'd be something magical about putting words with the piece?
I think, again, well, my ego was showing up in that. I've discovered that either I ride on the plane of being better than. So I am better than this. I want to put all this music in. I don't want to make any cuts. I don't want to keep it all. And then I'm also writing not good enough. And they kind of go, and this has been a discovery. I didn't realize it was going on when we were creating this. This has been something that I've been exploring. I mean, we created this back in 2014. This performance was
2016.
This performance was from 2016. So now 7 years later, I mean, there's been a lot of work and that we've gone through to find out, oh, well, this is where that ego is showing up every day, you know, and it's something that's been, it's been established, I guess, since I was 5 years old, five years old, and going to the types of schools that I went to, I think it was embedded, and it's been kind of an unwinding process. And I think the Chaconne Emancipated was just the beginning of the journey.
Even the name of it, Emancipated.
Yes. And, you know, there was a lot, and it was kind of the first time when people were really, I mean, of course, I've been reprimanded for things that I've done before, but people would say, the Chaconne does not need to be emancipated. They would come right back to me with that. And that was difficult for me. I thought, am I doing the right thing? Am I keeping my art form the way it should be?
I wanted to ask, tell us a little bit about how Amanda impacted that conversation and how it was working with her.
Wow. Well, she brought in a mediator. And I thought, what the heck is going on here? I don't do stuff this way. But actually, one of my former students who also understood Amanda's racial justice journey and who also understood myself as a teacher, she kind of came in.
She her name is Frances Miller, and she had a background in peace studies and social change, and she was a violinist. And I'm a theater artist. And so she was helping us translate from theater to music, but also from classical music. And the Chaconne
Yes.
You know, when he said we named it Emancipated, because we also wanted to free the chaconne from the constraints of the concert hall.
Right, right, right.
And all of those conservatories to make it like people music.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Are there some ways that you can think of in this moment, like you, that you're the first sort of birthing of this idea that the piece is much bigger and broader than sort of the confinement it had when it was in the conservatory? And again, I'm wondering about how Amanda influenced that sort of opening the piece up from the way you had learned it and making it more accessible. Yeah.
Well, I think a big thing for me, beyond like the one thing was the text. I mean, from a technical standpoint, that was a big thing for me to be able to follow. I thought I was doubling as a theater artist because here I am focusing on this text, trying to follow this piece that the notes would line up at a certain word. Having said that, I don't know if I would do it the same way today. We probably wouldn't, because art is fluid, especially music.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think one of the other things about the chaconne that's different when performing it in this context was that you melded it with African American spirituals.
Yes.
So he kept interrupting the chaconne with Black spirituals.
And I did not know these pieces.
No,
most of them.
No, you didn't. I mean, you. It took, and this was like a 3-year process. Let's just be clear. This was like an ongoing creative process, yes. Learning process.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Maybe in part two, we could ask more questions. I'm so curious about how that felt in the beginning stages when you stopped part of the chaconne and heard the sort of the influence of the spiritual, like how that influenced, you know, how you felt and how you played when you came back in. I'd be, you know, curious about those kinds of things. And let you sit with that. And I think I'm going to turn toward Amanda. And Amanda, you said that prior to meeting Michael, you did not like classical music. That you, in fact, hated the violin. Pretty strong, pretty strong expression. So, two questions for you. What changed for you? And also, is there something you can share with us about kind of why you hated the violin?
Okay. So, let me start with, I think what I didn't like about classical music, besides the harpsichord, which I still really, really hate, but what I didn't like about it was how it's, when I was in school, it was made to be like it was better than any other music. And I just hated that. Mm-hmm. I hated that it was put on a pedestal and that Black musics were not, you know. So I think what I hated was racism. What I said was I hated classical music.
Yeah.
And when I heard Michael play the chaconne, I also told him, I didn't tell you this, Retta, but I told Michael, I was like, oh yeah, I don't like classical music. I don't like Bach. I really don't like Mozart. And what I really loved about Michael was he didn't take offense. Mm. He took it on like a challenge. He was like, I bet you I can find you some pieces you would like. And I was like, I bet you, well, why don't you try? And actually he did. He found a piece of Mozart that I actually loved. I don't even remember that. And I was like, okay. And then he played me the chaconne. Mm-hmm. And like someone said, it was soul music.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Mm-hmm. Someone in the chat said something similar. It was so soulful.
Mm-hmm.
I realized, okay, you know, I just need to open up a bit here. That's what I realized. I need to open up a bit here.
Well, that is a beautiful story and brilliant of Michael to be able to figure out, to take that as an invitation rather than, you know, a cutoff. That's what's beautiful.
And so, I think that's a big lesson, actually. Michael, maybe, because I've said those comments around other people who have not taken it that way. They have not been happy. Mm-hmm. It's been like a shutdown.
Yes.
And so it was interesting. You didn't shut down at all.
I didn't.
Yeah.
And you didn't think I was stupid either.
Maybe
some
I
people
kinda,
think I'm stupid.
Maybe I was a little interested in you.
Too. Oh, I
okay.
You need another motive.
Yeah.
Well, it was a beautiful motive and has led to this moment. So glad you did, that you kept on. So, Amanda, how did you see implicit racial bias or white domination come up as you were performing or creating the piece?
Well, when we first did it, I was really angry. We did part one. You know, we did part one. It took us years to do part one, actually. So anyway, but the first time we did part one was soon after Ferguson, I think. I was really angry, upset. This is 2014, and we were at an event, a music event, and it was all white except for me, and Michael, the organizers, and Michael were like, "Can you guys do it?" And I was kind of like, I don't know. And Michael's like, "Yes, we got to do it. We got to do it." So I get up there and we do it, you know, and it was a weird situation. You could see that people were, even though it was the Chaconne, I mean, it was spirituals, but it was their music. It was classical music. Mm-hmm. It was a very alienated audience. And we heard later that someone said she felt like I was yelling at her. In my bringing of Dr. King's speech. Mm-hmm. So part of the journey mm-hmm. has been like wanting to express Dr. King's anger in 1963. People think I Have a Dream is really, I have a dream, mm-hmm. you know? But 1963 was after Birmingham. I mean, 1963 was hard. Yeah. Yeah. So when he went up there and he talked about the horrors of police brutality. Mm-hmm. He went up there and people were in a lot of pain. Yeah. And so I wanted to bring that, disrupt people's idea that King is a dreamer mm-hmm. and really make sure that they know he was, you know, he was an organizer and he was riding all these emotions too.
Yeah. Have you seen that change over the years as you have performed the piece in terms of the audience reaction?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. People have loved it. I mean, yeah, it's been loved. And actually, as people will see in parts two and three, when we went to rallies and stuff and vigils, we would often do part two, which you'll see.
Yes.
Which is the voice of Assata Shakur, former Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And because it's shorter, mm-hmm. But also, believe it or not, it's also extremely, I mean, it's sad and it's hopeful. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I guess that's what I would say. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I think before we, because we're about to go into part two, Michael, I think I'd like to come back to you and ask you that question about how the spirituals sort of influenced how you you know, what kind of shape you were in, how you played after hearing the spiritual when you went back to the piece. What can you share with us about what that was like for you, what you felt, how the pieces continued to sort of open you up around, yeah.
When I would play the spirituals when I do play the spirituals in the Chaconne, I even to this day, I have self doubt in my own self that, maybe because, you know, of where I am coming from in my background. But I also now have more of a recognition. We did a show, in Philadelphia, The Power of the Spiritual. Mm-hmm. And where I really learned a lot about the different pieces I still to this day have self-doubt about playing them in mm-hmm. the Chaconne and making them from me. Mm-hmm. You know, like am I worthy? Am I enough? Am I enough? Should I be a Black violinist? playing this, you know, but this be more
authentic.
Yeah, authentic. Even as much as I want to channel my sensitivity and creativity and soulfulness, I don't have that in my ancestry. You know, and I think a lot of the arts and performance, there is a certain amount of acting going on, and you put on a certain face, and I try to transmute it as much as possible, and definitely the way that the spirituals are woven in the Chaconne, I believe that. I full-heartedly believe that. I actually play the Chaconne on a regular basis, with and without the spirituals.
I know, now it's hard, remember?
Yeah. I play with both. And actually, the entire Chaconne has taken on a whole new spirit. What do the spirituals do? I think what do the spirituals do for me, the Chaconne for me, is like they make it more spiritual for me.
I think
because that's actually quote unquote my music,
right
you know, that I grew up with,
right?
I was, you know, groomed in that, but now it's taken on an entirely different meaning, and I have those spirituals to thank.
That's beautiful. You describe a little bit, I think, how race work goes, right? There's a point in which it's uncomfortable, but as we continue to do the work with courage, right, we get to hopefully grow and enter, as you call it, that spiritual realm. I want to thank you for that vulnerability answering that question, and point us back to part two.
I hope you all enjoyed that interview, and if you want to hear more about part two of the Chaconne and our creative process and actually hear it, you can do that in a couple of ways. You can join the Mother Tree Network and you can get access to the replay of the whole conversation and video, or if you want, you can download the Chaconne Emancipated from our Bandcamp page, and I'll have both of those links in the show notes. Listening to that conversation a second time or a third time, I'm really struck by how much it was a process, a three-year process to learn to collaborate inside of a committed partnership, a love partnership, and to do the work inside myself, to be present and honest, and to be a good listener and open and, you know, just stay in the dance. So if there's anything that I would say from this whole experience, it's that it is an unfolding, learning how to work across race lines, learning how to have respect for my lineage and what I bring and be open to others and their lineages and what they bring. It is a dance. It is a flow. And it is this opportunity to grow. So I hope that you all will do it in your own lives in some way. If you would like to get more in touch with yourself, if you would like to bring more power and presence to projects in your life, to relationships that are a little bit difficult or challenging, then I encourage you to sign up for our Gift of Presence Spring Equinox program. I'm going to put the link in the show notes for the wait list because I don't have all the details yet. But I do know it will be a chance for us to collectively transition from winter into spring, to envision what it is that we want to create in this new cycle beginning with spring, and to forgive and let go of whatever it is that is that would hold us back. So much of what we need to do is to forgive ourselves, accept ourselves, keep our hearts open, and trust ourselves again and again. So if you're interested in that, please go to the show notes or go to dramandakemp.com and you'll see an opportunity to sign up for the wait list so that you can be the first to get the information when it's ready. All right. Peace and love.